This is Radio Influence.
Good evening, everyone. It is Friday, June 15th, 2018, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Stink Funkly and
Beans.
I've been changing my name every night. I figure if I get out ahead of it, people will have no fire and no ammunition to make fun of me in the field. Like the first thing I saw with quite frankly, is that the acronym QF. It makes me think of Queef.
Oh my god!
And I was like, you know what? Somebody's gonna pick up on this. I better be the first one to get to it. So I went all over that too.
What did you just call yourself?
Stink Funkly, and I'll do like I don't know, just Dank Somethingly. It doesn't matter. I just every night something new. But I'm happy to be back with you, Tracy. This has become a really, really fun time, fun spot of the week for me.
I'm glad. I'm glad you enjoy it. I know in the beginning you were a little bit, this is all you. This is all your thing. I'm just riding along. But I don't think that's the case so much anymore. I think you're kind of, you're doing a little more than riding along, especially when you change the show name.
Yeah, we're filling each other out. This is good.
It is good. It's very good.
We're breaking in a baseball glove, a new baseball mitt. It's getting broken in now, so.
Well, we're going to talk today about the, can you guys guess what, IG report?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
I almost feel like it's been, like, watered down. Like, so many people are talking about it. Nobody thinks there's anything new in here for them to even look at. But that's so not the case. Tell me what your thoughts are. You know, full disclosure, first of all, I will not jump ahead like this is some kind of a kinky romance novel that I'm trying to get the end of before, you know, I get the meat and potatoes of. So I'm in the beginning of this thing. I'm probably, let's see, I'm on page 126. But what do you think?
I think that, obviously you've done a lot more reading than I have. I just went right to the conclusion and I started jumping around and I waited for people like yourself who are always putting together really comprehensive threads and asking questions and compiling passages and whatnot. I just waited for that to come out to see what was going on there. But the thing that gets me first is that, well, first of all, we don't have a media. And it's made me go off and just, I just started thinking about the existence of the White House press corps just altogether and why we even have it anymore, because I think some of the most honest work in media and in analyzing current events and policy and all that stuff is really being done independently through open source means and referencing history and the Constitution itself, and it has no spin. The first 5 minutes that this 600-page banger was made public is when everybody so many people ran out just to say, oh, it's a nothing burger. Oh, it's nothing. It's just like what we saw with the FISA memo, where it was a couple of weeks of warning against the unbelievable damage this is going to do to the country. And then within the first 10 minutes, it's everybody chuckling, sipping tea with their pinkies out, saying, oh, it's nothing. Of course, it's nothing. It's just trash. It's nothing. It's nothing. You know, the Jake Tappers and the Jake. I can't stand anybody, Tracy. I can't stand it. It's like you said it before. I mean, you were telling me before all the hours you've been reading so far since this was released. Early yesterday afternoon, and you're barely through 200 pages, and meanwhile everybody else has already written it off and it's the conclusions have been made and that's it. I don't get it.
It's frustrating, especially for me. And you know, I differ in this perspective from a lot of people that do this work too. You know, so I have a little bit of a different perspective on it. Look, I'm reading this thing line by line, very carefully, thinking about all the different angles that it could be coming from, what it could be saying that isn't just obvious on its face. what's been going on in the background, what's been going on all this time, things that we knew from open source reporting. You know, you can't, I don't care if you're the fastest reader on the face of the earth, you can't read this thing in the time that it's been out and come to any sort of a conclusion about, you know, each page branches off into five different topics that you could look into. Plain and simple. I'm sorry. Full stop for me there. Anybody that says that they're reading this thing and, you know, this is just another case of, you know, administration's gone wild. Nobody's going to be held accountable. This is never going to come to any. No. There's a whole section of this thing that's referenced within this report that's criminal in nature. It's a section about the criminality, and then another classified section about, you know, classified information and stuff that supposedly we can't see. I say anything that's not being used in an ongoing investigation right now, we should be able to read. But the fact that we can't read it and nothing else in this entire report is redacted, like everyone claimed it would be, means that there's a reason why that stuff is in there and we didn't get it. And it's likely because, as we've been saying for months and months, there are ongoing investigations right now. And anything that's released that would taint those investigations is counterproductive to the cases.
And you think about that, too. I was thinking about Huber, and I was thinking about all the legion of lawyers that have been pledged to this situation and this review. And I'm thinking to myself, why has this been so well? Why has Horowitz and Huber been so well resourced if this is going to come out to be nothing? And I think where I have come to the point of my biggest source of frustration outside of the media coverage, and of course, every ninny out there who, of course, you know, this is the social media generation where we want to be able to impact, we want to be able to leave a comment, we want to be able to have immediate satisfaction, immediate breakdown, and we want people to digest things for us like we're baby birds, and we want mama bird to throw up into our mouths so we can go off and be confident that somebody who actually put the time into reading or pretending that they did gave us the nuts and bolts of what was going on. That's all the internet and Twitter is full of right now, people who are sitting around waiting for Jake Tapper to say, oh, there's nothing in this, so that they can go, oh, whew, okay, well, now I can go to my friends and say, there's nothing in it. So, you know, aside from all of that,
we need to talk about that too.
Oh, yeah. And everything you just said about, you know, what's there and what's not there and ongoing investigations. I think my major point of frustration outside of the immediate media reaction and the spin to be able to calm certain parts of the population down and also try to stick it to other parts who have put a little bit, maybe too much hope into what this was going to say at first, because on the other side, whereas you have people waiting for the Jake Tappers of the world to say this is nothing, there's a lot of other people out there who believe that inside of this review, which is just – it's coming from an investigative body, not a prosecutorial body, was going to be full of indictments and all that stuff. People thought that there was going to be, you know, orders for arrest.
I know. And you know what the problem is? A lot of the problem with this is that – and that mode of thinking is that, look – even within some independents on our side of the aisle and others that are a little bit higher up, the spreading of disinformation and the omission of information and people squawking about things that they don't know, you know, they're giving wrong information. People had no idea what this thing was actually going to be. And so they're going off these assumptions that this was like, and I never said this was the end all be all for anything ever, but it is definitely very, very, very important. And I believe that we will, it's just frustrating to me, like all of the kind of talking heads that have done no justice, no service to the people that depend on them for information, putting out information that is just not true or was sources told me. I'm so sick of that. I'm so sick of reading, my source said X. It's just you, the fudge rule. You know what the fudge rule is, right?
No, go ahead. What is it?
The fudge rule is anytime you hear something came from a source and it's reported by the media specifically, you have to wait at least 24 hours because likely that tidbit will reverse itself on its face within 24 hours. Like the Sour Sanders, you know, is resigning at the end of the month or whatever.
Yeah, the end of the year, I saw that.
Yeah.
And well, listen, and that's the other thing too. Like, no matter what I'm reading on my own show, whenever I come across something that says a source familiar with the issue says, I always roll my eyes. It's like, if we go after mainstream media for pretty much you relying on anonymous sources to influence people's thinking about a certain issue, which is probably just somebody in the mailroom, their own mailroom, CNN's mailroom, somebody down there said something out loud. That's the anonymous source, and they can say it was. Because what do you have? You don't have to reveal your sources. And you say, well, if nobody wants to put their name to it, then how credible can this be?
Especially knowing what we know about what's been going on with leak investigations, especially, and there's something in the IG report that points to that as well that I'll go over in a second with you, but especially given what we know, we don't know what's a leak and what's a honeypot for people.
There's one more thing that gets me. It is the language of the conclusions. Now, I understand that in a 600-page review, to jump to the end and to read the parting words, the parting shots, and trying to skirt over all of the meat in between is not a very good thing. But yeah, I'm sure everybody did what I did and just jumped there just to start and see what was going on. The thing that gets me is that in many ways, and a lot of people have mirrored this frustration, that whereas for example, Kyle, the HNI, John Miller, and a few other people, the War Economy, and they started jumping in and immediately start pulling out screenshots and parts of the interior of this review that we're showing, this is a crime. This is an irregularity. Here's another policy being broken. Everybody, the FBI is using Gmail accounts.
And the State Department.
It's ridiculous. So you're reading all this stuff and you're like, oh my God, this is really, really damning shit. And what has it made me think about? It made me think about July 5th, 2016, James Comey spending 13 minutes reading off verified crimes. And then at the end saying, but there was no intent, but there is no such thing as gross negligence. There's only carelessness. All of this exonerating type of language. I started feeling like this report was almost like part two of July 5th, 2016. And that's what I was starting to get a little frustrated by.
Yeah.
And now I know you and other people would say that the real point here is that, and I started thinking to myself, well, I know that this is one phase of a few different reviews. I know we have FISA. We know we have more things that are coming down the pike. And I know that there are multiple references and multiple inferences to ongoing investigations, future investigations, future indictments. And that is a good reason why things are left a little bit vague. And I'm thinking that maybe, I don't know, is it possible that this almost like forgiving conclusion can be a little bit of a smokescreen for people who jump to the end while the meat and potatoes that is now presented to justice is there for their real consumption?
What I want to say is this. Think about what this IG – think first of all, what does the inspector general do? Do you know?
Inspect.
Inspect how? But what are they there to do?
For each department that they oversee, just to make sure that that there's oversight over the department's activities there.
Let's read, okay? Let's read what it is. Basically, you're right, but I just want to read this. The Department of Justice Office of the Inspector General is a statutorily created independent entity whose mission is to detect and deter waste, fraud, abuse, and misconduct in the Department of Justice and to promote economy and efficiency in the department's operations. Okay. Now I want to look at the background and what the OIG was tasked with doing in this report. This is not what they did. This is not all they did, but this is what the report was centered around. This is what they were looking at. This is what they were tasked to look at. Allegations that the department or FBI policies were not followed in connection with or in actions leading up to or related to Comey's public announcement and Comey's letter to Congress about the Hillary investigation. Allegations that certain investigative decisions were based on improper considerations. That is a specific task for them to look at. allegations that then FBI Director McCabe should have been recused, and it goes on and on. But there are very specific bullet points that they're tasked with looking into, and they have to approach their investigation, and the conclusions are in answer to those tasks that they have. Now, given that that's what the conclusion, this report is centered on those things. However, as we know, as we read through this, we're seeing those things are approached in here, but the other things that they find as they're approaching those things are spoken about with language more harsh, if not as harsh, than McCabe's 40-pager that got him criminal charges. So the Peter Strzok text message about "we will stop him" that we found in this report, the language they use to speak about that is so damning to Peter Strzok that it's not included in their background scope, so they wouldn't have put it in their conclusion. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the conclusion, while they're, yes, I understand everyone's frustration about these conclusions not being hard enough, and obviously there was bias, and I get it. I haven't read them yet. I'm not reading them. I just won't do it that way, but I understand what everybody's saying. At the same time, those conclusions address the background. They don't address everything else. And there are other conclusions peppered in here about the other things they found and likely that are in this classified criminal referral section that's at the end of this thing that speak to our frustrations. But nobody wants to hear it. Everybody would rather run screaming through the streets with their hair on fire.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think you're highlighting something big there. In one respect, is just that including myself, I'm not innocent of this, but everybody wanted this to be a very, very pronounced, unavoidable blow to the gut for especially the freaks in the media that have allowed people to. I mean, it's so frustrating because. Especially the media, because you want to know what the thing is that up until this point, they have not people, it doesn't matter how they vote, have not been allowed to really grasp how big this problem is, or even that there was even a problem and who it implicates, you know.
Yes, I agree. The problem is Frank or Stank or whatever you want to call yourself.
Today it's Frank, whatever. Hi, Frank.
The problem is that the media, even on the conservative side, does not care. They don't care. Excuse that pop. They don't care about the truth. They don't care. They want. It's almost as if, obviously, this drama sells, and they could be holding people accountable right now, and they could be telling people what's inside this thing. Like I said, I'm only on page 123. They could be telling people that stuff, but what are they doing instead?
They're looking out for their own interests because they are a separate entity from the rest of the country. There are two. See, this is the thing that's killing me right now. There was a time, and I was not conscious for it. There was a time where, you know, there's differences between parties, but everybody kind of was on the same team. There are two different countries within our borders. There are two different mindsets. There are two different levels at which justice is applied and what law and order means and what intentions are. It's just such a divide. And There's no reasoning with that because to be impartial is to be partial, and nobody wants to go and call a spade when they see one, because that means that to give up any kind of ground would mean to genuflect before the enemy. And that's what we have. We have a nation of people who see each other as enemies. There's no common ground anymore. That has evaporated. Hard lines have taken up where there used to be a little bit more of a moderate middle. There's nothing there.
I agree with you on that 100%. I have to say, though, like, it frustrates me because I'm like one of the only, I feel like I'm a very, I'm a minority in saying I'm still patient right now because I see what's happening and I know what's going on behind the scenes from what I see being written here. It's not like I'm making stuff up. This, you know, it's clear, right?
Oh no. I totally get what you're saying, and I'm not denying that there is a lot of really heavy hitting stuff inside of the of the report here. I'm just saying that it's the process of bringing this to the surface and having and allowing people to be able to digest it, to talk it out, to analyze it, and actually really understand the gravity of the situation. That is frustrating because the entities, the media entities out there that are supposed to be doing the digging that civilians are having to take into their own hands are not. They're protecting people from the truth, yes. And they're trying to divert people from any other way of seeing how this government, how these agencies have been conducting themselves. And you want to talk about independently operating agencies. The administration of these agencies have been independent from the entire country.
Yeah, they've been under their own rules. The second half of what I was going to say there, because it wasn't an attack on you, I totally understand what you were trying to say. I didn't take it like you were saying
I don't feel attacked. Don't worry.
You don't?
I didn't feel attacked. No, I knew what you were saying. I knew it.
Okay, good. So the second half of that, what is going to be that people are almost getting angry that certain folks aren't angry at what they're seeing because they've been conditioned to be angry about it, that it's nothing, that nothing's ever going to happen. And I'd say, okay, let's pretend for a second, Frank, we're there. Let's pretend in some world this report is a whitewash. There's nothing in it. Nobody's ever going to be held accountable. Well, guess what, people? Screaming about it on Twitter is not going to do anything, okay? So, like, I planned that march a year, like, you know, a few months ago for transparency from our Justice Department. And how many people, like 250, 300 people showed up? You can't just sit on – if you're going to be one of those people, negative Nancy's, negative Nellies, running around saying how nothing's ever going to change and that we're never going to get anywhere, then get up off your ass, excuse my French, and do something about it. It's your country. If we don't as people get loud about this, then the government, the people in charge, they have no incentive to change. Why would they give a crap? They're just going to keep doing the same stuff over and over again. And we're going to be sitting here complaining about it and fighting with one another on Twitter about it. It's not okay. There's going to come a point in time, and I'm not convinced we're there anywhere near there yet, honestly. We're going to need to get up off our butts and actually do something about this from an activism standpoint. It has to happen. It has to.
Yeah. Well, I think the big thing here is that we need to be one side is unhinged from the Constitution, is unhinged from law. You can't make any headway, especially in the court of public opinion, if you're just as emotional and unstable as the other side. There is a lot to just sit down and root yourself in, and that's the big thing here. I really do believe that we just got to calm down and stick to what's real and what needs to be done step by step. And it is always comes down to the stability of the people on the ground and how they see the country and how they see true liberalism, where, you know, everybody has a place at the table and that's it. And also the ability to leave each other alone. We got to get back to that. We're fighting through. I feel like we're trapped in a real weird labyrinth of alternate dimensions, trying to get ourselves back to reality. Well,
we got Dennis Rodman crying on CNN about his visits to the North Korean dictator and how he was a part of the diplomacy, which I'm sure that at this point, honestly, I'm not doubting that he wasn't part of the diplomacy. I mean, we're on a crazy timeline. We really are. But at the same time, people are frustrated and need to see some action. There has been abject criminality in our country for a really long time, and there is sunlight on it now. I mean, there are statements in this report, Frank, that are clearly, like, for an example, would you like one example?
Please.
This was in, I believe, this was on page, like, 3. Of the report, and everybody kind of skipped over it, and nobody said anything about it. They talked about the beginning of it, but not the end. They identified instances where FBI employees improperly received benefits from reporters, including tickets to sporting events, golf outings, drinks and meals, and admittance to non-public social events. That's where everybody stopped. Oh my God. And it's wrong. It's wrong. We can talk about that in a second. But everybody stopped there. The next sentence. We will separately report on those investigations as they are concluded, consistent with the Inspector General Act, other applicable federal statutes, and OIG policy. So what does that tell you?
There's a lot more going on this, that there's ongoing probes and investigations that are not being really elaborated on right now in this report.
Exactly, which were found via this report. So that's what I'm trying to say. Like, the scope of this report is very narrow on what they're supposed to be looking at and what they're tasked with evaluating. And, you know, the FBI director, Ray, came out yesterday and basically said, like, we're going to reform the department. It was such a waste of a press conference. Dude should have just not said anything. But that's besides the point. He came out and said how he's going to rectify the problems that the OIG found. And that's a lot of the times what this OIG does. But in this case, it's so much more. And that one sentence that everybody conveniently skipped over gives you a very good window into what's happening very early on in this report, in the first couple pages in the introduction. So that's why I'm reading it sentence by sentence.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, you think about how many sentences there are in a 600-page report. So, and like we said, it's right now it's 11:35 a.m. It wasn't even released 24 hours ago at this point. So for anybody to think that they have a grasp on it all and what it says and what it doesn't say, that's another part of the reason. Like, seriously, I keep bringing him up. Jake Tapper, it's almost like he just sits – he tweets all day. Chris Cuomo tweets all day.
I know.
Are they reading? Are they reading this report if they're sitting there tweeting and fighting with people?
Look, I know for a fact even journalists on our side that write for papers and things that we read don't do this work. They don't. They don't do it. It's not enough staff. It's too much time. Blah, blah, blah. That's why I'm consistently saying anyone who's giving independent journalists shit or questioning, you know, why they get money from supporters and just shut up, okay? Because you don't have anybody else doing the work that these people are doing. So, you know, either you want the truth from people who are doing the actual work to find it or you don't. Pick one. Because you don't have the option. You know, we need to really reevaluate, because I know this for a fact that it's not happening. People aren't reading this thing. They're taking the little highlighted talking points that were handed out about it and they're flowing with them. And nobody's reading it. And I'm sorry, like, I have no problem doing this. I love it. This is why I'm here. This is my job. My job is to read this thing from start to finish. And thank goodness I'm coming at this from a place, the right place. Can you imagine, like, in other words, what I'm trying to say is people trust us to do this, right? They trust us to read this thing and tell them what's going on. But at the same time, they don't wait for that process to finish. And then they take everything that other people are saying that haven't done the work to read. There's no way these people have read this thing. And I'm a little fired up around this because it's frustrating to me.
No, 100%. I hate to cut you off. I want to agree with you on that. That is exactly the point of my frustration. I am not looking at this and saying the whole thing is a bust. I know that there's a lot in there and there's a lot more coming down the pike. It's just the environment in which we're living, especially how closed off everything is. And there's a lot of defeatism out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of chest beating for no reason. There's a lot of proud peacocks out there strutting around, because at some point in this report, there is the phrase, no bias was used in whatever. When they say no political bias, that's it. Three words is what the entire 560 something pages amounts to for millions of people right now. And they've walked away from this strutting around and waiting for their blue wave to come. And that's the thing that's killing me, because I don't give a damn about Democrats or Republicans.
Yeah.
The problem here is across the board. I mean, every time that I say something about this or anything else that's plaguing our agencies in the executive branch, I always get people that come back to say, you know, that Rose Rosenstein and Comey
and Republican. I know. So
people say they're card carrying Republicans. I was like, do you think I care about the Republican Party?
Real patriots don't give a crap, Frank. We don't. I mean, I don't care. That's the last thing. I just want these criminals to go down. I don't care who they represent, what views they represent. Doesn't matter to me. I don't care.
Absolutely.
The other thing too. Thankfully, first of all, thankfully, the people that matter are not looking at this report for talking points, and they're actually using this, 18-month long investigation with all of this detail and 600 pages, twice the length of the Benghazi report, to actually filter through and find what's going on here. And those appendices are so important. But separately, like yesterday, we had someone come out and say, and I'm not going to name any names because I want to. Sources tell me that there are no criminal referrals in this report. Well, your sources would be right because they don't put criminal referrals in the report. That statement made it look like there were going to be no criminal referrals to come out of this thing. And everybody, this is before it even came out. They don't put them in. They don't say we're referring so-and-so for criminal prosecution. That's not what happens. So just know the process before you squawk. Like if I had a source come up to me and say, here's information on A, I would do my best to vet that information and make sure that it's even possible before I went out to my, 300,000 folks on Twitter and spread it around like wildfire. Just saying.
That's it. But it's all part of what do you want the outcome to be? And that's the problem here. I guess it's once again that double-edged sword of the social media age we live in. I think it's great that we are skirting around corporate news interests. And I think that it's great that it has allowed people who have integrity to actually go and contribute to a little bit more of a well-rounded effort in understanding what's going on around us. But at the same time, there's a lot of people who just know who have an idea of how they want things to turn out, and they're just going to do their own thing. They become like little tiny NBCs and to unaccountable NBCs, and
I'm on a quest to stop that. Like, I'm on a quest. I'm really, seriously, I've dedicated like my life now to stopping the nonsense and actually providing a work product with integrity. What's so hard about just telling the truth about something and doing due diligence to source things and make sure things are real before you say them to hundreds of thousands of people who you've been blessed enough to come to you for information because they trust you? It's a responsibility that I don't think that anybody realize, very few people understand how much of a responsibility it is. And, of course, mistakes are going to be made along the way. But the good old retraction immediately afterwards with a long explanation that gets just as much weight as the original statement would be nice for once. I'm just the media as a whole, even some independents. It's just frustrating to me. Not that I'm like the best or anything. I'm not trying to say it that way. It's just I just wish that we could count on more people to do the right thing and stop flaming. There's already enough division in the country. We don't need to fan it more. We need people to be outraged about what they see happening, but for the right reasons.
But what are those right reasons? When I sit down and I'm sometimes writing some ideas and I'm writing some notes down for a nightly show, or maybe I'm in the middle of a tirade or something, and I hear the stuff coming out of my mouth, and even though I know where I'm coming from, and internally I know all the nuances attached to whatever comes out of my mouth, I listen to myself from the point of view of the other side, and it's just a reverse. For example, let me see. What's something that is just that comes out? Oh my gosh! I was just thinking of one headline and one thing that was going on, and it's just whatever is the truth for it's the opposite. Oh, Bernie Sanders, for example. This is what happens all the time. Bernie Sanders the other day, he gets up and he gets up before people and he's pretty much saying that Donald Trump is using race and class and gender and all this stuff to separate and divide people.
Oh my God.
And I'm laughing to myself. I'm like, this is the exact party platform.
That you're
This is the Democratic Party platform, the Socialist Democratic Party platform. In fact, it's been the Socialist Party, it's Socialist platform for as long as socialism has been a thing. It's all about class warfare, dividing people up and creating dependency on an equalizing force, which comes in the form of a strong central government. And, you know, for him to go out there and accuse the other side, I know it's Saul Alinsky tactics, but this takes root. And people that follow him believe Trump is doing this thing. On the other side, we know for a fact that this is just the history of the type of ideology that they are ascribing to on the left. And you'll never be able to, they'll just be able to throw it back at you with just as much confidence as you throw history and it back at them. And it, that frustrates the hell at me, hell out of me. And it's almost like has its own mini gaslighting effect in itself, where you almost say for a second, am I the one that's wrong? He's like, no. Yeah. No, I'm not wrong. And you want to know what it always comes down to? It always comes down to one thing. Because whereas the other side of any argument can throw the same exact accusations out at you, I always ask myself one thing to know whether or not I'm on the right side of history or not. What am I demanding of other people in my stance? Am I demanding that other people give up their money to so that my worldview can mirror, you know, reality? Am I demanding other people give up their rights to make choices? Am I demanding other people give up their rights to use language they want and express certain types of ideas? Am I demanding other people limit the way that they live and express themselves and use their money and go out and apply their ambition to the way that they lived life and all that stuff and really just seek fulfillment? Am I asking anybody to curb that in an effort to be able to bring my worldview to the fore? And it's always no. The other side, on the other, for example, on the flip side, they want to make sure that there's regulations on everything you do, say, eat, smoke, drink, love, bake. They want to make sure that there is regulation and limits on everything. And that's why, even though they can throw out the very same accusations that you throw at them, and it kind of creates this almost like of a stalemate, when you really get down to the crux of it, what is either side asking of the other side? Is one trying to enforce something on the other, or is the other, I mean, and that's it. It just comes down to that. And that's the thing that really gets me. So you have to, You have to use that as a barometer sometimes, because the stalemate that is created from all of this propaganda really makes your head spin.
I agree with you. That was brilliant, first of all. Like the whole point of what am I demanding from someone else? And obviously, if you're coming from the side of liberty, nothing. You just want to be left the hell alone, and you want someone else to be left alone. I mean, it's very easy. I don't understand why it's always such a difficult concept for people to pick up on, and why people are so averse to it. I mean, it's just, it's almost the most natural way you can be. It's conditioning, I guess, that does it. But like, what I'm saying is basically we need to be frustrated and angry and upset and hold our government accountable and get mad and you know, we need to be doing it with facts behind us, not conjecture from, you know, sources and not people that benefit from an emotional group of people. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are people who benefit from you being emotional, from you being afraid, from you being scared of what's going to happen and needing them. There are people that benefit from that. We need to change the culture so that people are angry because the facts are laying in front of them and they have those facts in their back pocket, and they can then go out and with their sign and say, here's a fact. You know, this can't be anymore. But we can't have rhetoric. We can't use that as our basically our rallying cry. Rhetoric.
Yeah.
That's my point. I mean, it's a culture change. And, you know, who am I to even be saying this stuff, I guess. But, hey, it's my soapbox right now. So here we are.
No, you're 100% right. And rhetoric is one of those tricky things. I think it's a good it's seasoning. It shouldn't actually be. It shouldn't ever be the crux of your argument, which is what is on the other side. Now, you have just platitudes about equality and platitudes about this and that and well, how the world should be divided up and how far people should be able to strive for success in their personal lives before it becomes a hindrance on somebody else's ambition. I mean, it's all platitudes on the other side. That's why I like simplicity and I like principles. And when you use rhetoric in a very tasteful way, it's just like, you know, sprinkle a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper on top of everything. It makes it a little bit more, it makes it a little bit more easy to grasp. And of course, nobody is without their own personal biases. But as long as you have something, as Thomas Jefferson says, on matters of principle, stand like a rock, and on matters of style, you can swim. What is it like? Swim with the current. It's one of those things. You have to have two. It's okay to have a little bit of rhetoric and a little bit of flair, but that can't be the meat. That can't be the potatoes of your argument.
You want to know what's so funny? And I'm listening to this as you're talking and you're making such awesome points. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, we're talking, we're having a great conversation, but you and I are really talking about two different things. And this is, you know, I'm talking about just our side, like where we stand, our little corner of the world. And you know, you're including in that the hypocrisy of the left and the establishment. The way I'm looking at this juncture is from, you know, the people that have been searching out this truth for so long and who want to see heads on a pike, it, figuratively, what's going on within that little world right now. It's funny that it can be applicable on both sides.
It is. And I'll tell you what I really want. What I really want is I want to see entire departments gone. Entire departments gone. Like even outside of the whole IG report, watching all of these headlines flow in about Scott Pruitt and the EPA, I was like, you want to know a really great way that we don't have to worry about
Yeah,
that's exactly. I would love to not worry about whose pick for EPA head is doing, what they're doing, who they're appointing, who they're giving special favors to. Get rid of the EPA. You're telling me that Rhode Island is going to be incapable of keeping the rivers and streams clean, but some senator or somebody from Nevada is going to be able to keep Rhode Island clean for them? That's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
People need to start understanding small government. It's time. It really is time. I really feel like it's time. I was, you know, if you were on the Ron Paul, part of the Ron Paul revolution, you thought it was time back in 2008, and yeah, it wasn't. I think we're really getting there now. Like seriously, if Dr. Paul wasn't so old and he were to run again and after Trump's tenure, I think he would have a really good shot at winning, because that's what it's all about. I mean, seriously, enough is enough already.
I'm glad you say that, because, you know, I was watching a little bit of President Trump's words and statements that he made this morning to Fox and Friends and other things, just whatever has been passed around on Twitter and stuff. And, you know, there's something, I still wince at some of the things he says. I understand, you know, we brought in a real estate developer, negotiator type, to come in and solve big sensitive world problems like North Korea. Now, there's a reason why I'm bringing this up, and it's because, you know, you look at North Korea as a nuclear threat. Now, him going out there and doing everything he can, calling Kim Jong-un an impressive guy, only 1 in 10,000 could be able to slip into the shoes that has been given to him, and all that stuff. People are, you know, they're feigning outrage and all this. You're giving too much attention and too much legitimacy to a killer and a murderer. Like, you have no clue. It's like, this is a guy who, how much has he gone and complimented Maduro in Venezuela? How many compliments has he given the Castros in Cuba? Where has he gone and complimented people, complimented brutal dictatorships around the world who are not nuclear powers?
You mean they're not wearing Fidel Castro shirts anymore?
Exactly. This guy, Trump, is trying to get nuclear weapons out of the hands of a despot. And everybody is up in arms about him saying, oh, this and that. Now, I still wince when he says stuff like he loves his people. Okay, that just like, okay, you don't go that far. Please just don't go that far. It's ridiculous.
I mean, what if we don't know, though, Frank? I mean, there's a lot of grumbling, like from even foreign policy experts, that Kim was kind of handcuffed by China and other countries, kind of forced to do certain things that maybe he didn't want to do. And he fired the last three of those generals that were kind of telling him what to do, too. So maybe he didn't want to do that stuff. Maybe he did love his people.
I am still not I don't have any kind of convictions on whether it's all yes or all no on that, because like I know his background, educated in the West, and I know that this is something that was flung, you know, he was flung into the middle of. Maybe he was, you know, the black sheep of the family who is trying to break away from it and open up new doors of development. Who the hell knows? All I know is that. And what was the original reason we started this conversation? It was
I talked about Ron Paul, and then you said you listened to Trump this morning. Yeah.
So here I always bring up the allegory of the wrecking ball and the scalpel. You need the wrecking ball to be able to break down that brick wall and just kill the old paradigm, the old way of doing things, and just open up new ways for the surgeons, for the scalpel, for the people who can come in and articulate and rebuild something that is a little bit less of a wall and maybe a park bench. Who the hell knows what it is? But, you know, for Trump, I think the most important thing about him is, even though he still says things that make you wince at times, that maybe you don't have to go that far, that you're doing just enough, what he is doing is he's opening up the door for a Ron Paul type to come in and be able to talk a little bit more about what Americanism is. He's bringing back pride in the flag and telling people to get off their asses and be a little bit more optimistic, and he's scaring the shit out of the left and their control on the narrative for so long.
And the right.
Oh, absolutely, because they work in tandem. It's WWE. They're just playing their roles. They're all soft bellies, and that's exactly what's going on. But what he's done is he's opened up the door for somebody else to come in and make even better points, articulate even more so why free markets and decentralization and localization of government is actually the most liberal thing to do for people. It's the most compassionate thing to do for all people, and it actually does let the baby elephants into the tent. Right now, there's no room for anybody else because things have been so centralized that everything that we talk about is dictated to us by a very small group of people, because all that matters are the 100 people in the Senate. All that matters are the couple of 100 people in the House of Representatives who really have large part given up their legislative duties to a very, very strong executive branch. And all the members of Congress, especially on the left, do is they're just a media wing of a leftist ideology. Maxine Waters is not a statesman. Nancy Pelosi's not a statesman. They do media junkets all day long. There's no voice for the little people anymore.
Okay, that was great. First of all, we're gonna have to cut that out and keep it as a standalone. While you were talking and saying that, I had something flash across my screen. Number one, I hope Omar Navarro beats the living pants off of Maxine Waters in California. It would be better than, like, almost on par with Donald Trump winning the presidency for me.
Yes. Yes.
Legit. Yeah. So Omar,
especially since we're supposed to be completely overwhelmed by a blue wave, to see Maxine Waters, who has been in office for how many decades now? I think she won her first election in 1990 or something. Oh God, that would be amazing.
So Omar, we're pulling for you out here. We're pulling for you. Number two, Paul Manafort is on his way to jail.
Right now?
He was ordered to imprisonment, so he's going to jail. I don't know exactly when they're taking him there. Former Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort is going to jail. He was jailed Friday following allegations he reached out to potential witnesses in the federal Russian probe, which he did, from what I've seen anyway. Protesters outside the courthouse shouted, "Lock him up." Oh, isn't that wonderful? Trump says I feel badly about it because I think it's very unfair. I feel a little badly about it. They went back 12 years to get things that he did 12 years ago. Oh, goodness. Well, I mean, hey, that's what happens when you try to tamper with witnesses in your criminal trial through a third party using what you thought were private messaging apps. I there's nothing much you can say about it. I've read the text messages.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, once again, what's on the surface? Paul Manafort had a cup of coffee with the Trump campaign a couple of months there in 2016. And that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter that he's going to jail for something 12 years ago. Doesn't matter if he's going to jail for something from 1946. It's just that Paul Manafort, Trump, the election 2016, and that's it. There's the cloud of suspicion keeps brewing and it stays there in place. And that's all that matters for the media right now.
I'm not supposed to be feeling this way today. I'm supposed to be feeling like I'm going to spend another 12 or 13 hours today reading through this document, but I'm so fed up with everybody. I'm so fed up. I'm fed up with everybody. I'm fed up. That's it. Put a fork in me. I'm done right now. Put a fork in me.
You got it.
Thanks.
You got it. Fork delivered.
Thanks. Stinky McStinkerson. I appreciate it. You know what's... Go ahead.
No, you. Please.
I call my kids stink number one and stink number two, just by the way.
Yep. My parents used to call me and Anthony the Menendez brothers.
Oh, my God.
Because we were so bad. We would just break it. We would never – the thing about my brother and I is like we would never like get into fist fights or really like anything big. But what we would go to, we would strangle each other. Like there was something – we always just end up on the floor tangled up like pretzels and just with our hands wrapped around each other's throats strangling each other. That's what we went to.
Let's tell another story. One time my mom used to keep our crayons in like coffee containers, like the old Savarin coffee containers. And she kept them underneath the sink. And I went under there to get crayons one day and I pulled them and I brought the jar over and I sat down and I laid down on the floor and I was opening the jar to get the crayons out. And little to my surprise, it was cooking oil that had been used in the jar. I took the wrong jar. I took the cooking oil jar, not the crayon jar. And I was covered in like meatball cooking oil for.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I actually have a cooking oil story too. Whenever my mother would go, my mother and stepfather, when they would go on, like they had a yearly tradition of going down to Universal Studios in Florida. Sometimes we would go, but other times, like she would just like to go down for Halloween horror and stuff like that. And we loved it when she went away when we were in high school because while she was gone for a couple of days, we can, you know, we can have friends over. And we never really threw house parties, but we just like we'd have like nights where people would come by and we would cook and all that stuff on our own. And we would make a lot of the things that we used to make. We used to love making chicken cutlets and stuff like that. And so we had all this oil at the end. And I remember one year, my buddy Mike, we were like, okay, well, this is like one of the first times we were learning on the job. We're like, okay, well, we got all this oil in this pan. What the hell do we do it now? Now we know that you let it sit, you let it settle a little bit, and then you pour it into like a coffee can or something like that, and you try to get rid of it that way. What we did, Mike says, well, you do it like the old Italians do it. Just throw it off the back porch.
You know, it's so funny you said that. Okay, go ahead.
God, so we threw – I mean, remember, we go on the back porch, and we're on the top – and my grandfather lives downstairs.
Oh, no.
And we poured it off the side of the porch and it got all over this maple tree because it right next to it. And it's oil. So it never got off for like maybe the rest of the summer. The tree is just glistening with oil. It's killing off half of the tree's leaves. And we were yelled at big time. Oh, one time we were making homemade garlic bread and it caught fire inside of the oven, and we had to put it out with the fire extinguisher. First time we did that, I had to use a fire extinguisher too. So we had a lot of that going on.
Oh, my gosh. I heard the story about throwing the oil off the back porch too, and I killed all my grass doing that.
See? See?
You're not supposed to do that. And I know, so, like, I had a babysitter, not for me, for my kids one time, who thought it would be wise every time she cooked to take the oil and toss it down the drain, because in New York I had to work like three jobs in order to maintain any sense of my bills being paid. And so I was never home for my kids, which is just the perfect way to live. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I had someone at my house that I had to pay from the hard work that I was doing. It was just killed me. Anyway, she was taking the cooking oil that she was using and dumping it down my sink.
Oh, boy.
So when my cesspool got destroyed because she was pouring this oil down the drain every day, I was none too happy. She was fired.
Hey, well, you know, that's a perfect allegory for not eating, not having
dry food.
Yeah, well, not having a diet that is so high in saturated fats, because when you look at all of these, these diets that especially so rich in animal fats and whatnot. Yeah, when they're hot and when you're frying things up, it becomes very, very liquidy and all that stuff. But once you let it settle, it cakes up, it creates plaque, it solidifies. That happens on the inside of your body, and that's why, you know, you get plaque on your arteries. That's a lot. So, you know, you go and you see how it screws up the piping at home. If you put it down, if you don't think it's going to happen to your arteries.
Oh, my God.
You know, so there's that's
why, Frank, why?
Just gotta consider it.
That's great advice for all the fathers out there. It'll be Father's Day this Sunday, so let's say happy Father's Day to everybody. And actually, we're out of time, so it was a nice good wind down for the last 10 minutes when, you know, I thought that I would be like, and I'm still working on this thing, obviously. I mean, this is what I do. So I'm sitting here reading this thing all day, but I thought that I would be just pedal to metal. I'm finding I need to take more breaks than I thought I would be taking. This show was a great way to do that and vent.
Good venting. And yes, happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all of the attentive fathers out there.
Yeah. This hour flew by.
Yeah.
Flew by. All right. Well, hey, thanks everyone for being here. You guys can listen to the Dark Delight with Frank and Beans. Every week at 5 p.m. Eastern on Fridays on radioinfluence.com. Tune in, Stitcher, Google Play, and that's it, right?
That's it. I believe so.
All right. Well, thanks for being here, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
There was a Charlotte, North Carolina police officer, Officer Andrew Spotswood. He recently encountered an elderly man that was a veteran. His wallet was stolen by a woman. So, of course, he lost his money, his debit card, his ID, and his bus pass, which basically left him immobile. So Officer Andrew Spotswood saw this, and he actually took the guy to the DMV for a new ID. He took him to the bank to get a new debit card, and then he got him a new bus pass. But, of course, he still had no money. So the last thing that this officer did was he took the man, who's a veteran, to get a meal on the officer. I think this officer just has compassion, just like many police officers have compassion for the people they serve. They just get a bad rap in the mainstream media.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.